This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick on Twitter at OldFLA and visit his website, rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How are you doing, Rick?
Great. I'm finally starting to get in the holiday spirit. It's taken me a while. My wife actually had our tree up before Halloween. So it takes me a bit to catch up to her, but I'm getting there. And looking forward to cooler weather later today and tomorrow.
I love our cold fronts, and I think what I love most about them is that they do not stay.
Spoken like a true Floridian.
I was saying to my husband yesterday, I said, if climate change were going the other way and Florida was getting colder, we would both be screwed. Anyway, that is something that resonated with me in a book written by our guest today, Kim Love. She's Florida is not for sissies. We're going to have her on in just a second, but I love that right at the beginning of her book, she talks about Florida having seasons and gives this great example of how in Gainesville, you could not buy a bathing suit in early October, but you could get scarves and gloves because they do have seasons. But I'm going to let her talk more about it. You actually brought her to us. So I guess I should technically let you introduce her.
Well, I met Kim, I think, through Tom Hochter, who's a friend of mine who's a scientist at UF. Excuse me while I cough here. And she approached me about a cover for her book, and she wanted something that kind of looked like a citrus label, as I recall. But I think she found an illustrator who nailed it. Kim, so tell us about, because we talked recently about how important cover art is in a book. And Kim, I think your cover is amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I am not a visual artist and by any means. and my publisher, when I told her what I was interested in, and it is an homage to the historic citrus crepe labels, and she said, well, I think I've got the guy for you. And so what I did, I put a collage together of all the things that I wanted in there, you know, just clips from the internet, basically. And so I sent it over, and it's funny because the guy is actually from Italy. It was amazing to me that there were only a couple of things that we had to change. He had put a mountain in the background, which was pretty funny. But not being familiar with the topography of Florida. But anyway, that was the major thing that I changed because I said, I'm not going to have a landfill on the cover of my book. And those are the only things that resemble mountains in the state of Florida. So we did away with that. And, you know, it was remarkable to me that he did just right out of the gate such a stunning picture. So yeah, it was great. He put it all together the way that I had it, basically. And so anyway, it's remarkable the way that it turned out, the way that it did.
I have one big question about the title of your book. So how come you didn't do Florida Ain't for Sissies?
You know, I was thinking about that because you were the one person who said I really needed to go that way.
I know.
I wanted to elevate the discussion just a little bit. I mean, there's a lot in the book about cracker culture. And yes, we use ain't as a regular word down here. But I just to say is not just seemed more emphatic to me.
You're right. And I just love my buddy tells me I'm the only one he knows that says fixin' to. And
You're not.
I absolutely say that all the time.
You are not the only one. And I happen to live with a fella who grew up in Philadelphia and upstate New York. And every time I say fixin' to, he goes, what exactly does that mean? Like, you know, Southern expressions, you don't really have to understand them. You just have to roll with it.
Yeah, it just feels good coming off the tongue, I think.
I tell people it's like pornography. You'll know it when you hear it.
Exactly.
So I wanted to say that Kim's book to me seems like it's intense Florida-splaining. Kathy came up with the term Florida-splaining.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. But
I like
It's her book is just full of it. It's like an encyclopedia of Florida-splaining, honestly.
That's really nice. Thank you.
It's, yeah.
You want to go put a review on Amazon for me? Do one for Kim while you're there.
I will. What I, you know, I do. It's very hard for me to read stuff online. That's one of the things I realized, that I resist reading screens because I sit here at a screen all day, that I need to get a hard copy of the book. So I went and looked at it on Amazon and put on my gift list so I can get a copy in my hand. Because what I want to do is go through it with a highlighter and highlight all the great stuff in it. And that's what I love to do. So when I my books tend to have a lot of little sticky things hanging out of them. And that's when you know that it's important to me that I go back and refer to it again and again and again.
Here you go.
Your book is like that. You know what I really love is the last part where you have the kind of A to Z list.
Oh, okay.
The Darwin type.
Darwin,
things.
Yeah.
That's Darwin so life. Much fun. Yeah.
I'm glad that you said that because I was discouraged, or I had someone say, you know, it's going to be repetitive. It's not really in the mode of the rest of the book, but I thought it was just important. And actually, I had envisioned it as a tear out, that, you know, a guide that people could keep with them. But that wasn't very practical in terms of publication. So, you know, I just felt compelled to do it that way.
You got a lot in there. You know, it's A to Z, algae. It starts with algae and it just keeps on going through the alphabet. And there were things I had to look up, like wildfire complex. I didn't know what that was. Cutthroat seep. I didn't know what that was. There's some serious, I don't know, science or it's really good. Like you learn a lot about Florida. And I thought I knew a lot about Florida, but you're at a whole nother level.
Well, I appreciate that. And I didn't know about wildfire complexes either until we were evacuated from Flagler County back in the spring of 98 and the summer of 98 when the whole county was on fire and we had to evacuate. And there was only one road out and it was the beach road, A1A. And I remember I had to drive all the way to Green Cove Springs, which, you know, is almost to Jacksonville, to get around to Gainesville from Flagler, you know, from Palm Coast. And so, I mean, it was really serious. That was probably one of the scariest things I've ever encountered because they had, you know, a 60-foot wall of fire coming through a pine forest, pretty scary. And those guys that fight those wildfires are, man, they're my heroes. You know, the pilots that pull water out of lakes and, I mean, it's pretty fancy flying. And they are definitely amazing, amazing people, the work that they do.
So in your book, you make, well, right from the beginning, Florida is not for sissies. And I wanted to ask you, who is Florida for? I know it's kind of an overarching a theme, but I'm really curious, who is the ideal Floridian? And this is not so much what your book is talking about, but I think about this a lot. Who can be a Floridian? Because I talk about how very removed so many of us are from the actual wildness of Florida and how so many Floridians would absolutely not survive here without the built environment. Even a lot of Floridians who rail against the built environment. So who is Florida for?
Well, you know, I say it in the book, and people say it all the time. It's like, if it wasn't for air conditioning and screens, you know, it would be the indigenous people probably were the only ones who would be left. But the whole point of my book, really, I mean, it started out as a public service because of my experience with disasters back in 98, working with the state and fires and hurricanes and, you know, all these natural disasters, and the fact that there was really no information available. It's not in comp planning. You know, the idea is that Florida is a dangerous environment. And just to raise public awareness was my initial thought, because I've been involved with public service forever. And then to pull the geography in and try to explain how Florida is unique and to make people aware of how vulnerable the environment is and how special our ecology is and how that ecology fits with our economy. So it gets back to a sense of place and trying to spread that out to the world, because it is such a special place. And there's, you know, you come to Florida, and this is a thing I talk about in the book, and you're very aware of this. When people move to Florida, they bring their sense of place with them. You know, they want to be in Florida because it's warm in the winter, but they want things like they were when they were in Michigan, you know, with the turf lawns and, you know, perfectly manicured everything. And, you know, and that's not Florida. That is something that has been built. You mentioned the built environment. So, you know, just trying to raise awareness about the vulnerability of this peninsula and specific habitat and how things have changed over time. And, you know, there's a whole section of the book about population development. And, you know, one of the basic tenets of the book is that tourism is a symptom and development is the disease. I mean, people come here, you know, for Disney or whatever, and that's what they get. They get Disney and they get the beach. And those are, you know, and they're all, in a way, when they travel here, many of them are sort of hermetically sealed. They don't really get a Florida experience. They get Disney Springs instead of a real spring, Rick.
Yeah, don't get me started on Disney Springs.
Rick hates that. But I mean, you say in your book exactly something I said to my cousin who lives in Connecticut. I was up in Connecticut and we were driving on their horrible roads, because apparently when everything freezes and unfreezes every year, it's not great for your roads. But there were trees everywhere. I'm like, oh, these are really pretty. I just, you know, being nice, goes, well, you don't have anything like that in Florida. And I'm like, excuse me, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, trees and forests. I'm like, we have a significant amount of tree canopy and green space in Florida. I said, but you have to do more than fly into Tampa International and take I-4 to Disney to actually experience it. I am not a Disney apologist and I am not a Disney hater, but I do go to Disney. And when we go, because I live in the Tampa Bay area, very often we will go to Disney and get off I-4 before Lakeland and take back roads. And you go through some beautiful forested areas. You go through a wildlife management area. And it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. But most people don't see it because they've just got to get there and get the Dole Whip, which I get. But I mean, you have to really explore the state to understand that we are more than our interstates. And even some of our parks are very sanitized. You know, they're all, and if you don't believe that, just go to any type of nature experience in the Bahamas, where OSHA is not as involved. And you'll realize that we're keeping people safe from the natural environment. But I think at some point, that also makes the natural environment the enemy. If you have to be protected from it, then it must be evil. I have a talk I give to one of my friends is an animal studies professor at Eckerd College, and she will periodically have me come in and give a talk called Florida is not trying to kill you. It could if it wanted to, but it's not. Because that's very much the case. There's a lot of things that can definitely kill you in Florida, but if you're responsible with your ecotourism, it doesn't have to be. I think that we have a big opportunity in Florida. We could play off all these people who want to come here. And instead of sending them to splendid China or whatever the hell else is out there on the I-4 corridor, let's take them on the Kissimmee River. Let them have an airboat ride. I like airboats. Let's go kayaking. Let's do some hiking. I mean, the state could really push that a lot more if it wanted to. And it's such a lower impact way to see the state. Sorry, I got a little soapboxy there. I don't know if Rick warned you. I tend to do that.
No, that's fine. No, I totally agree. And the problem is that so many areas have become so congested. Even back up in the Ocala National Forest, some of the backwaters that you wouldn't think would be crowded, they're just really overwhelmed. And Rainbow Springs and Rainbow River, I mean, man, you go there on a weekend in the summertime, you can't.
Well, you don't go there. They close it. Like, sorry, springs are full. It's literally like in that Chevy Chase Vacation, right? Like, sorry, folks, park's closed. And no one ever says Florida's closed. Do you remember that bit they did?
Yeah.
We should say Florida's closed. All our parks are full. There's a line to get in. We just need to, you need to let one out.
Well, you know, I do in the book talk about my xenophobic North Florida farm girl that I have to contain, because, you know, we are so overrun in so many different ways. And I know you write about back roads, but with GPS now, it seems that even down where I am in the middle of, you know, cow country, that the roads that I used to run where we wouldn't see any traffic at all, now even Okeechobee has gotten crowded. And we do have the largest KOA in the country. And so our population here practically doubles between Halloween and Easter. So, you know, and I don't blame people for wanting to be warm. I get it. But, you know, I guess my message would be for the people who, you know, talking about who needs to be a Floridian or who can be a Floridian, you know, it's just a matter of respect, really, for each other and for different areas and habitat and, you know, how to conduct yourself therein.
So I'm not a Floridian by birth. I didn't move here until my parents moved here when I was 7. And I always say I was very, very blessed that my mom and dad did not want to recreate where they hated New York and they loved it here. So I never heard anything disparaging about Florida. I didn't grow up with, well, that's not how we do it up. None of that shit. And even I can respect the irony of me not wanting more people here because that's what my parents did. And then both sets of their parents came down too. And, but there's, I think, Tom Corcoran, one of his characters in his Key West Mysteries, one of his characters says, you know, hey, you're not the first Floridian who wants to slam the door behind you. But that's definitely, I get a little pissy about Northerners. I mean, we have it going on in an election in the city I live in now, which is for Pinellas County standards, fairly small. We have 3 people running, and one of them is a person who has for years been telling people how they used to do it back where she came from and how we could do it better. And I'll be goddamned if I'm going to vote for that. I mean, go back. Works both ways, you know?
Well, Kathy, I'm on the boat. Pull up the ladder.
Yes, okay. That's exactly it. Let you know, hey, it's got to go. It's I'm fascinated with this KOA though. This is huge. I just looked it up while you were talking. We just got a new travel trailer, and the truck that we ordered in April to pull it is finally going to be ready, they say, next week. So there are no, touching on what you said, there are no campgrounds available. We are looking for a state park to go to and just relax.
And you have to book them a year in advance. You know, it's only in the last few years that you have to go online and book, you know. And well, you know, and yes, I'm old and I've been around a long time. We used to go to Palm, where Dune Hammock or Hammock Dunes is now over there on the Barrier Island off of Palm Coast. We'd go down to the end of the road and camp on the beach. You know, I mean, that was what we did.
I am old enough to remember driving down to the Keys on the strength that I would get a walk-up campsite at Bahia Honda, and I got it.
Yeah. What year was that?
It was 2003, believe it or not.
Wow. Okay.
I mean,
that's pretty good.
It is funny, though, how we used to travel like that with, you know, I remember not having accommodation someplace, and you just go up and you look for the no vacancy signs. I mean, I'm not a big camper, but you used to do that. I mean, because you didn't have the internet, you had maps, and you would just, you know, if you needed to call somebody, you had to pull over and use a payphone. So you kept quarters, you know, all that kind of stuff. And now, and I think that's really affected, you know, the way we do things in Florida, because, you know, now people across the world can book an Airbnb and, you know, hotels get full and you have to take care of your accommodations before you go anywhere because you might be shut out or forced to go to a very, very sketchy hotel on the trail.
So I have a plan for this. I've got it all worked out. The state parks campgrounds they have a senior rate, and it's fantastic. They need to have a resident and non-resident rate, and they need to make those non-residents pony up. I mean,
oh, that's a great idea.
Economically, could someone call Ron DeSantis before he leaves? And can he do that? Right?
I don't know. I mean, I the bigger problem, I think, is the whole idea that they want to build, you know, their solution to solving that would be build giant resort hotels that all are safe.
But think about the revenue. Maybe even, I mean, if it really needs to lean into what Ron DeSantis is doing politically, let's just charge people from the blue states more. I don't care. Let's charge somebody from out of state more. Let's ramp it up. I mean, those people, because
maybe we need like an entry gate at I-75 and I-95, and you have to pay a toll to come into the state.
Oh, Rick, you are singing my song.
Why can't we do that?
I had to put a toll gate up in 1968 with
Shoot,
2 week visas.
I moved here in 66. I got in just under the bar.
I did not. Well, I mean, there's ways. Seriously, going back, you know, you talk about in your book, and I know we just went way far afield of your book, but you talk about a lot of the realities of Florida. And what kept coming to me is like a lot of these things are definitely draws to the state. Like, how do I explain that? When I was working on Backroads, we were up in the panhandle and it was very, very dry. And I read in some local paper up there, a forest ranger saying, "We need rain with a name." And it took me a minute to realize he was talking about a hurricane. And it's, you know, it's the yin and the yang. Like, I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but down where I am, and I'm sure maybe, I don't know how far from the coast you are, but hurricanes are a real problem, but they also serve a purpose. And I just, you know, I always have to remember that when we think about these things, what might be horrifying to somebody else is good for somebody else. Like, there's always two sides to it. I revert to Craig Pittman's writing about the pythons, right? They're destroying the Everglades, but they're also an endangered species in Southeast Asia. Like, it's there's a lot to these dangerous things in Florida that I guess I find the beauty in the danger. Maybe there's something wrong with me.
Well, here's my take on that. When I was growing up, we had hurricane parties. Now, because they have intensified so much due to the warming of the Atlantic and especially the Gulf, it's a new ball game. It's not something to party about anymore. And the frequency, I mean, just this year, and that was, I had really finished writing about hurricanes, and then Ian came along, and then Nicole. And then this year it was like, oh my gosh, I'm either ahead of the ball or behind the ball, because this was such a dramatic hurricane season. But the point is that they are intensifying, they're getting worse. And a tropical storm, yes. I mean, there have been times, there was a tropical storm, Debbie, that came through the panhandle and put out wildfires. And that was a blessing. But it also created a lot of sinkholes.
Are you talking about the one just a few months ago?
No. Sorry. This was several years ago.
Yes. I remember that, Debbie, as well.
Yeah. And so it was a blessing and a curse at the same time, because it dumped so much rain in Live Oak, in the Live Oak area, that they had extensive sinkholes. But it put out the wildfires. And what people don't realize about wildfires is that they can travel about 25 miles an hour when they get going. So I understand a forester wanting, being interested in having some big rain. I get that. And after Michael, that did all that damage up in the panhandle, one of the biggest problems came much later with all that fuel laying on the ground, because there was a 20-mile wide swath on between, and these are obscure places, between Hosford and Ebro on Highway 20 up there, where every pine tree was broken off at about 6 feet off the ground. I mean, so you've got all this fuel that you can have, then you get the tremendous wildfires behind a hurricane. So, it's like I talk a little bit in my book about disasters within disasters. And it's a thing. It's definitely a thing, because you've got the post storm things that you wouldn't even think about. But yet there are other aspects of it. Like when, I'm trying to think, it was in 98. So it must have been, I know they had part of the thing with the wildfires. We set up a task force. I was working at DCA at the time, and we set up a task force to deal with the fact that they had to get the pine trees removed and processed within a certain period of time, because if they didn't, there's this thing called blue stain that ruins the lumber. And so you're in a crunch to take care of the devastation, basically. So, it affected a whole industry. So we were trying to protect the lumber industry at the same time that people were trying to clean up after the wildfires and hurricanes. And, 98 was a crazy year, because we went from a flood situation in Southwest Florida, El Nino floods, to drought, to wildfires, and then more wildfires when they closed the Pepsi 500. If they closed down the Pepsi 500 in July, you're in serious trouble. And then the next thing that happened was two hurricanes back to back, George and Mitch. So it was a busy year, but it's getting to the point now where it's not an isolated thing.
Yeah, no, it seems like that happens. Well, although wildfires don't seem like they happen as much, but it seems like every year the storms are crazy. Sorry, what were you going to say, Kathy?
Oh, I was going to say every year is a crazy busy year. Yeah. This year, I joke that the past 4 months have lasted 20 years. we were in the thick of it, and so much of. As with so many things humans do, so much of our troubles are self-inflicted, right? So this year we had Debbie, Helene, and Milton along the Gulf Coast, and they didn't, they brushed up against the most populous most densely populated county, which happens to be a coastal county in the state. And I've said this, I'm sure, on this podcast before, so much of the devastation we have now results from people building on dredged land, right? Like, we've done this to ourselves. Now, the people
and rebuilding.
Right. And the people who live there now maybe aren't the ones who did it. I'm not suggesting that anybody had this coming. I mean, it's heartbreaking to watch people's lives and fortunes toppled. But starting about 100 years ago, you know, you can look at the aerial maps of the city I live in, and there is not a building that was damaged that was on land that existed 100 years ago. And it's like, you know, we're doing this to ourselves. And I don't know what the answer is, and I get a little despondent.
I'm going back to the toll gates at the state, because I, you know, to me, the thread through all of this is that the separation, you know, that we think we're separate from nature, that, you know, we live, you said, Kim said, hermetically sealed in these little belt environments that we don't feel the connection to the rest of nature. Like, you know, you talked about how a hurricane is a good thing. They're bad things for people. They're good things for the land. They're good things for the environmental systems. But for when we're too many of us, you know, in places we shouldn't be to begin with, that's where when it's bad and from our human point of view.
It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I have a video I took do not try this at home. As Milton was blowing on shore, I stepped outside my front door and I took a few minutes of video of the wind and the rain at night. And it was breathtaking. It was absolutely breathtaking. It is a force of nature. The Everglades, the southern part, the Everglades south of US 41 on the Tamiami Trail after Hurricane Irma came through. Stunning, stunning. Wading birds. I mean, just water where you don't see water in February in South Florida. I mean, there's a lot. We have to find a way. I have a neighbor. I tell people that when the zombie apocalypse comes, or whatever apocalypse we happen to be facing comes, I'm going to his house. He is a retired AMP airplane mechanic. I can go to his house because he has some honeybees. And so every now and then I will drop off a glass jar for him to use, because he doesn't use plastic either. And I'll go to his house in July, and it's a block house, nothing special about it. Windows will be open. His air conditioning does not run. He's got a full food forest working in his backyard. I mean, this guy is ready. But just to be without air conditioning in July in Florida is a very extremist thing to do. But he's not hermetically sealed. I feel like after a hurricane, he's the guy I'm going to go to. That makes sense. I mean, we need more Floridians like that. No?
Kim, you got, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure how to respond to that. I mean, I think we definitely could use more of that. Fewer HOA rules and more native planting. You know, getting instead of turf, you know, the native planting and that sort of thing is always good. But again, you know, people want what they want, and you know, it's discouraging in a way, because your friend Kathy is a rare person. And I was just, when you were talking about no air conditioning in July, I was remembering that my parents got air conditioning as I went off to college. It was like, come on now, that's just not fair. I could have used some of that when I was in high school, but you know, it's, again, things have changed. It's hotter now than it was then. You know, growing up in Gainesville, you could set your watch at 3 o'clock for a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Yeah. And, so, you know, things have changed. And I guess, you know, a couple of things that I wanted to mention in terms of, you know, the whole situation here in Florida has to do with carrying capacity. and something that doesn't really get talked about. And, you know, even in the lawmaking and ruling, people don't talk about cumulative impacts and carrying capacity. And that's really where our problems lie in terms of impact on our habitat and our, you know, natural systems.
So what does that mean exactly?
Well, carrying capacity is the ability of an ecosystem to basically perform its natural function. And when you have so many impacts, you know, it's like all these developments that are going in, they don't accommodate any of the natural landscape that's there. You go by, I mean, and it's everywhere, it's rampant. They rip everything out down to the dirt and start over. But yeah, what they start over with is not the native plantings. It's not, there's no replacement of what they've destroyed. And of course, they always name it for what they've destroyed.
Right. Yeah. Panther Trace, Eagle Run.
Exactly. We call that eco assassinating.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So that has to do with the ability of an ecosystem to perform its natural function. And that's where carrying capacity comes in. But the other thing, which is cumulative impacts, like in permitting, you know, and the permits for bottled water up on the, you know, in the Springs territory, Rick, which you're really familiar with, you know, they just issue these permits, and the permits was like $150, and they pump another 1 million gallons of water a day, put it in plastic, send it off, make their fortune, and put nothing back to protect the, you know, the resource, which is a major frustration for anybody who's been involved with any kind of work with the Springs.
And it continues on and on unabated. And yeah, so you venture into the political side of it as well, which I think is where a lot of these problems come from. And that, you know, honestly, the state of Florida really has a lot of things that it needs to face head on. And we're not, we're worried about bathrooms and books and stuff that have really no relevance to, you know, the things we need to be dealing with. And you go head first into it.
Yeah, it's an old story. When I started working for the Water Management District in 1991, they're still having the same discussions now, all, you know, 40 years later. And what happened, one of the things that happened was that they set, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, they set a limit in metric tons of phosphorus in the Kissimmee. And they couldn't meet it. Because, well, one thing is that there's so much phosphorus just naturally in the system, just right in the ground, which complicates things. But then you get cattle and row crops. And, you know, so anyway, the point being is they couldn't make or meet the limit. So they just kicked the can down the road and went to this BMAP system, the Basin Management Area Plans. And to me, it's just another way to delay taking responsibility for actually improving the waters of the state. And our lakes and rivers are in trouble. And you would think, with our economy based so much on those features, that the powers that be would be more interested in it. But the way that the laws are written are a problem too. There's a discussion in the book about these rulings that come down through judges, and they say, well, you know, you can't really prove this, or you can't really do that. because of the way that the laws are written. And nobody wants to mess with 373, which is the water law for the state of Florida. So what happens is that things keep going because that law does not address cumulative impacts. And so it's a piece by piece rather than the 10,000 foot view for a cure and to control things, you know, like edge of farm dumping of phosphorus and the dairies that were moved out of the Kissimmee Basin that have now polluted the springs in North Florida. You know, we just talk about causing your own problems. But the overpumping combination, and y'all were talking about this with, is it Mendel? Is that how you pronounce
it? Mendel is how he pronounces it.
Mendel. Yeah. And I was listening to that just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And, you know, he really gets down to the nitty gritty about that as well. So it's frustrating and it's ironic and, you know, just unbelievable, really, that there's not more done to clean these waters up. Because if you go like Silver Springs, I went with my sister-in-law not too long ago. And we went in one of the glass bottom boats and she's going, oh, this is really cool. And I'm crying because there's so much algae on the eelgrass. You can't even tell that it's eelgrass. So it's all in perspective. It's like the reefs, you know, people who go out on the reefs now, they go, oh, this is really cool. Well, if you'd been on those reefs 30 years ago, you would be crying too. So, you know, it's all what you know and what you see that has been degraded because of the lack of political will to clean up our waters. And it's discouraging, but you know, it's not hopeless. It's just that we need people who are serious about making things, you know, making our resources better. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, I mean, it's,
I feel like Rick hasn't had a soapbox yet this episode.
Part of, I think, our responsibilities as people who are older than 20, who've been in Florida for a while, is to shine a light on what Florida should be. Because, you know, my big fear is I see all these photos on social media of people who take pictures in our springs and they think it's the best thing ever. And it's like, I immediately look at the gunk at the bottom, like you did at Silver Springs. And I know that's not what a healthy spring should look like. And, you know, I try and create awareness that, you know, these things are a problem. And I do think there is a good amount of awareness, but there's also resignation and people are voting on people for the wrong reasons. And, you know, and as an electorate, we allow people in office who don't care about these things and we keep voting for them again and again and again. And it's increasingly frustrating for me in Florida because, I know people care about the environment. I know people want clean springs and healthy waters, but they don't seem to have the intelligence to make different choices. And it frustrates me to know. And I hope I didn't just slam our audience, but I mean, come on, people, we got to do something different because, you know, it's the goose that laid the golden egg, this beautiful environment, this paradise that we live in, and we're destroying it. And we're just, you know, we're like Nero fiddling while Rome burns, and it's frustrates me to no end. That's my soapbox for the today.
I was going to say, there it is.
Well, you opened it up for me.
No, it's fine. No, I mean, and so there's some culpability here too with either travel writers kill what they love, right? And how much have I written for good money? You know, I make my living telling people where to discover parts of Florida that they're not going to find anywhere else, and it isn't enough just to tell them to go there. You know, we have to start including with all discourse about traveling Florida, how to travel Florida responsibly. Like, you know, maybe not everybody needs to rent a car when they come here. Maybe, you know, we don't all need to go to the springs. Maybe we don't bring a baby who isn't toilet trained to the springs. Maybe we don't drink bottled water when we're here. You know, maybe. I mean, it's a lot to go on. I think I would change the title of your book to Loving Florida is Not for Sissies, because it's complicated, right? Like, isn't that an option on Facebook? I think for relationships, it's complicated. It's complicated, right? I love Florida so much and I want people to see it like I see it, but I don't want them to hurt it. Like, and I want them to be in it, but I don't want them to be in it too much. It's a complicated emotion.
That's really true.
It's a conundrum, because if they don't get out an experience, they can't have any appreciation for it.
Right. But right. So that's like the Cronin essay about wilderness, that if it's truly wild, it means humans have not entered it. And if they can't experience it, they don't care about it. They only care about what they can touch.
Sorry. Oh, I agree with you. No, it's true. And the thing too, it's very complicated. I remember when I first went to work for the Water Management District, Sonny Williamson, who you may or may not know, is a rancher here in Okeechobee, wonderful guy, and my mentor. But about the first thing he ever said to me was that, for, you know, anybody who thinks dealing with water resource management is simple, they just don't know enough. And it's really true, because there's so many different facets to it. You know, again, the economy, agriculture, industry, you know, they always talk about the three-legged stool of the Florida economy, you know, and agriculture, tourism, and whatever the other one is. I can't remember right this minute, but you know, you've got to accommodate all those things in order to keep the economy running. But our tourism is, and brings Disney Springs back to mind, you know, that is not nature tourism. And how do you, other than writing about it, Kathy, I mean, how do you educate people about not only the place, but the respect for the place? And, you know, that's the hard part, because they're, it's, you know, people that run boats at, you know, 50 miles an hour up Santa Fe, they don't understand what they're doing to, you know, the system. So it's, you know, it's tough. It's a challenge for sure. For sure.
Okay, I'm sad now.
Don't be sad.
Well, this is our work. And, you know, there's a lot of things that come to mind. You know, part of it is, you know, I've heard this talked about with water, is part of the problem with water is it's free and it's cheap. And people don't care about it because they can open up a spigot and get it. And get a big pack of bottled water. If it was super expensive, then people would care about it more. Maybe we need to make nature more expensive so that people care about it. Maybe we need to charge more to go into our state parks or in our national parks so that people really, you know, cherish the experience. I don't know.
And here's the thing. I mean, that, you know, a big part of my interest in writing this book, I mean, I've had a love affair with geography for a long time. I didn't find geography until I was in my 30s, but when I did, I was all in. And the great thing about geography is that it really explains where we are, why we're here, what's going on, you know, as opposed, it really explains history. And it explains why things are the way they are. And that's why I went to such great lengths in the book to explain about karst topography and where our water comes from. And what people, I think one of the things that people don't even think about is that it takes a lot of water to produce electricity. And, you know, you go to Palm Beach, they got the doors open on the shops, you know, to lure people in, and they're trying to air condition the world when it's 115 degrees outside with 100 degree humidity, you know, and here you are just burning up all this electricity. And that's just another thing that affects the amount of water that's in the system. But, you know, who's going to think about that? You know, because they just, they don't know. And so
well, it's little things, Like there's a web hosting where you can, you know, if you want to be certified as a B Corporation, you actually have to think about web hosting. What's the carbon footprint of the person hosting your website? There's so many different ways people can make a difference that it's disheartening to see. And that's just an example. But I mean, it's disheartening to see people who are thinking about things like this remote server who hosts my website. I want it to be as low of an impact as possible. And then you walk down the street, and as you say, people are either trying to air condition the sidewalk or water it. And it's
right.
I worked with a guy once who said, you know, that sidewalk isn't going to grow no matter how much you water it.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's my biggest frustration. There are so many people, and you know, there are sidewalks around here that just get gridded with algae because they're watered so often.
Well, water's too cheap. That's the problem.
Yes.
It's far too expensive. You know, cleaning water is ridiculously expensive. So it would be better off if we didn't overuse it. Yeah. But anyway, I've not for sissies. Loving Florida is not for sissies, which is not the name of the book. The name of the book is Florida is Not for Sissies. It's available now. Is that correct?
That's right.
And we have a website in our show notes.
Yeah. As of last week, it's available through an ebook, you know, for Kindle. And we've also got a Facebook page up for merchandise to sell that great cover.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's brand new. Brand new, just coming up. And because I've had a lot of requests for t-shirts, actually, because they love the artwork. So that's up on Facebook, I think today or tomorrow.
And so there is a Florida is Not for Sissies book on Facebook.
Facebook page.
Oh, I just liked it. Oh, and there's some other cool art. I love the graphic with the alligator coming through the burning flame with your book title on. That's super cool.
My daughter-in-law did that. She's magic, man. She's taking care of all of that.
And look at that. Here's a promo for the podcast.
Isn't that incredible?
It's amazing.
We should probably wrap it up so that we can get the podcast episode live so people can go listen to it.
My takeaway is something you said, Kathy, is look for the beauty and the danger. And I think maybe we need to look for the beauty and the tragedy as well.
God.
Well, and I guess, you know, the thing that I would say is that I got into this. It all started as a public service, and then it just grew. And because of my background in geography, it was a lot to organize. And so I tried my best to do it sort of in a thematic approach with location and place and human environmental interaction, things that we had used at National Geographic when I was working on a geography education program many, many moons ago. But it's a lot to organize, and it is complicated. And I know that in the book, I do repeat myself about certain things, but admittedly so, because I thought they were important. So it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of information. And I hope that people will enjoy it. And Rick, you mentioned the Darwin section. There are just so many funny stories about, you know, Florida Man and the things that people do. But my there are other people who do that better than I do. You know, the Florida writers, Florida centric writers that talk about crazy things that go on here. And I mentioned a few of those, but mostly I just was all about raising people's awareness. And it's kind of a love letter and kind of a, you know, cautionary tale of the little muckraking thrown in, but I'm glad that it's been born. It took a long time. It was a long gestation period. So I'm glad that it's out in the world, and I hope that it can be a guide to people enjoying Florida and being careful.
Well put.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Said.
Congratulations. It's a big deal to get a book out. It really
Thank
is.
You.
And it's
Thank you.
A lot of work, but it's a good feeling once it's out there and people can read it.
And you should read it.
Yes.
Not you, Kimball. You've read it. I mean, other people.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for being out here today with us. And we're looking forward to seeing more work from you and having you back on the podcast.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. Go out. Check out Florida is Not for Sissies. If you're really inspired, you can even get a Florida is Not for Sissies candle that you can burn when the power goes out, because the power will always go out. And we'll see you next time on Florida Spectacular.